Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking with Vassos Alexander about his new book, How to Run a Marathon. Speaking of the marathon, Jane, you were chatting with Hugh Brasher, race director of the London Marathon this week. You're the person with access. Tell us what happened.
I was. It was a very, very positive chat with the man himself. It was good. He was basically saying the plan for 2021 is 100,000 London Marathon runners, 50,000 on the day on the course, and another 50,000 on the virtual London Marathon, which they were really, really pleased with how it went last October, and they're keeping it. They want it to stay. They want it to be the new format, the new normal of the London Marathon is to have this double event.
Oh wow! So like, regardless of the kind of situation, that's gonna happen anyway, even when we're back to sort of big city, big crowd events.
And there wasn't much. Obviously, they were very kept their cards close to the chest in the kind of contingency plans if the vaccine hasn't rolled out or there's a new strain or, you know, any questions like that. It's just kind of, there are plan A, B, C, D, E, but Runner's World weren't lucky enough to see inside that, you know, that kind of thought.
The vault.
Bubble or whatever you want to call it.
bubble.
They're really, really, really positive that this October the 3rd, London Marathon will be back. As we know it, maybe a bit different, who knows?
That's good. I think, yeah. I mean, when I first read it, I was a bit like, oh, it's a brazen statement to say that they're going to be ready to go. But then I guess you've got to be, with everything that's been going on and races being cancelled multiple times and having to sort of, if you were running any of them, build yourself up and then take the hit of it being cancelled and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that you've kind of got to have that line in the sand now, I guess, is the most important bit.
Well, I did say to them, I was like, for some runners, I guess listening to this as well as reading the interview, some people will have been training for this London Marathon for over a year now. And I was just like, what can you give them to keep them going? And it's, I think London Marathon were kind of saying it's the hope of having like the plan. And I think for all of us this weekend, it's been so cold. And I think having a plan can help you go out when you don't want to. So I guess that's the kind of message that even if you have your doubts over what the day might look like, having a plan can help you right now when everything feels a bit bleak.
For sure.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think we can often think about marathon training plans as something that, why on earth would you want to sort of go through a marathon training plan if there wasn't the guarantee of a race at the end of it? But I think there is another argument that says that actually having, yeah, like you say, having a plan gets you motivated, gets you out there. I don't think that many people ever really regret getting, you know, fit enough to run a race like that. Actually, there are some great benefits that can be had just through the training. So I think you can progress even if you're not 100% sure there's going to be a race at the end of it. But it all sounds pretty positive.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Side note, have you ever completed a training plan with absolutely no race coming up?
No.
I don't know, in some ways, like not as black and white as that, but I think that my training over the last sort of 3 years has been sort of, there's been a long run, there's been something quick in the week, there's been some slow stuff. So almost the kind of training that you would do if there was a race. It's not like, oh, there's no race, I'll just go and I'm just doing really, really slow running now until there's a point. I kind of actually like the kind of variety that you get in a schedule, if that makes sense.
I said
no straight off the bat, but actually I've done that. I haven't run a race since last January, and I'm still having a plan written for me by the lovely Lewis from New Levels Coaching, and that really helps me. I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably just go out and run the same distance.
The same pace, maybe.
The same pace, yeah. The same route. I've become one of those weird people that wears the same outfit in different colours every day. Maybe. You know, like in the cartoons, when they open the wardrobe and they're all the same. Maybe that would be me if I didn't have a plan.
But it is an interesting one, though, because I think that, I mean, you're running, Ben. Like, you love to run, but you're not a prolific racer. But you still find the motivation to get out there.
Yeah. I mean, that comes from just wanting to move, though. Like, a lot of the time, that's just like a fidgety body, you know, syndrome, whatever it is. When I just sort of like, you get that sort of itchy, oh God, I haven't done anything all day. Like, I'm sitting looking out the window now and seeing the most gorgeous, like, blue sky, winter sun situation. Yeah. And my default setting is just like, wow, imagine running round now in that and just being outside.
I agree.
So that's kind of where the motivation from it comes. But yeah, I mean, I've completed lot like big training blocks before, and I guess that definitely has helped with the aim of achieving something at the end of it. I think that, I don't know, it actually just never crossed my mind during this whole time to be like, I could just do an 8-week 5K training plan for the sake of doing it, and then having completed it, just go and try and run 5K as fast as you can or however you want to do it, and that'd be good enough. My brain hadn't gone like, yeah, you could do that. Well, so maybe that's quite an interesting sort of side note, I thought, just to be like,
do a
plan for no reason apart from just to get faster or go longer or whatever.
Yeah. So some events have been going on, and there was one on the weekend, which is the 100-kilometre world record attempt. We talked about it last week with Carla Molinaro came on, and it was quite a mad old day, wasn't it? There was... Jim Walmsley missed out on the men's record by 12 seconds.
Which
is nothing, is it? Over 100 kilometres, 12 seconds.
I read that he bash his arm, or he was bleeding or something, wasn't he?
So he must have fallen over. He was bleeding out of his sort of shoulder, arm area.
I think he ran
area.
Into a barrier or something, because that would add 12 seconds, wouldn't it? Being like, oh my God, my arm is bleeding. Bless
him. Quite bad, actually. Yeah. So his time was, what was it? It was 6 hours, 9 minutes and 26 seconds. So but it works out at like sort of 6 minute mile in for 62 miles, which is, so like in marathon,
that's madness.
It's a 2:37 marathon, times that by two, and then run another 10 miles at the same pace.
Oh my God.
It's mad, isn't it? When you put it like that, it's like, wow, that is insane. And then also you just miss out by 12 seconds.
And that's all anyone can talk about. I feel like we should go back and re-edit ourselves and start with the 12-second news.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's such an incredible, like, it's such an incredible sort of level up on running. Do you know what I mean? When you kind of, like, you get bogged down by different times, meaning certain amounts of, you know, sort of, numbers and round, big, nice, now round numbers, 100, 100 something or something, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, when you break it down into pace per mile that someone's able to achieve, then you suddenly go, wow, that's amazing running. Because the distance is, you can understand it, but it's kind of almost just a bit like, that's a figure.
Mm. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But you can relate an effort, you know, a personal effort. Like, oh, right, he ran just under 6 minute miles for 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, when was the last time I ran like under six for like 3 miles?
For one mile. Like,
it's like, that is incredible. Yeah,
yeah, so, it's amazing. Yeah. You were following Carla's progress, Jane, a bit on Instagram.
I was. I don't want to put words in Carla's mouth, but I don't think the race went to plan for her. And I think... she did these really emotional stories afterwards where she was in tears kind of talking about how the race hadn't gone to plan. And I just kind of thought, we've all been there, haven't we? When you finish and you're like, that's not what I wanted to happen.
Yeah.
But you've still run the distance and you've still done an amazing achievement, but I think it wasn't what she wanted. I think it was maybe the case she went out too hard, too quick.
I think that's right, yeah. She was leading until the 70-kilometre mark and then, yeah, just faded, I think finished fourth. Yeah. Still a PB, apparently, and, yes, finishing eight hours 1:22. So still a really amazing bit of running, but not what she was hoping for.
She ran a 22-minute PB. Wow. So like that's, you know, still incredible.
And yeah.
She was looking at all the things that she's posted and sort of feedback on the whole thing. Her plan was absolutely to go out hard and fast and basically hold on as long as she could. And she either was going to do it or she didn't. And this time around she didn't. But, you know, I think that there's so many eyes on events like this now. That's where the sort of release afterwards comes from. Like if it was a 100K race and it wasn't televised and it wasn't just you and a set number of athletes all from the same brand, all trying to do the same thing, all in line with a new shoe that's come out. Do you know what I mean? There's a whole world of like doing your job as a sponsored athlete, doing your job as an athlete, doing your job as everything else. I kind of feel like the pressure and every that sort of situation. But yeah, still phenomenal. 8 hours, just over 8 hours to run 100K is mad. I've definitely gone on bike rides that have been slower in the same distance. So there you go.
I also think that we talk a lot about pacing, don't we? And the importance of the even pace, or if you can, even maybe like to do a negative split, so to do the second half faster than the first.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a place for the heroic kind of going all out in the hope that you might be able to hold on, knowing that you're right on the limit, and actually, yeah, you know, maybe blowing up a little bit and the lessons that you can learn through that. There is something courageous, I think, about maybe heading off a little bit faster than you can possibly sustain and seeing what you can do. It can go very badly wrong or very right, but I kind of think that there's a lot to be admired about that approach as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a totally different event and a totally different race strategy, but it still always reminds me of when Andy Badley came on the podcast and was talking about running the record for the park run, and how Andy, his coach, was following behind and was telling him splits that didn't exist because the watch the watch had stopped working.
Right.
And Andy just went out really hard and really fast. And like for a 5K, like, you know, that's basically you're doing 1500 meter pace or whatever it was he was doing. And yeah. And just kind of managed to hold on. And it's that sort of that fine line between going out actually harder than you think you can, basically, that sort of level. And it always reminds me of him just being a bit like, I just did it because I was being told it was all right. And then I got the record and it turns out it was faster than I'd ever been before. And you're like, oh, so there's that level of like, if you go hard
exactly.
and someone goes, no, you're on pace, you just think, oh, well, it just feels a bit harder today, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'll just carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just carry on.
I mean, 5K is a bit different to 100, but there we go.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, you can have a worse time for longer, can't you, when the distance goes up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's something in that. All right, well, I think we should bring on our guest of the week.
Yeah, let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
So our guest this week is broadcaster, author, and serial marathon runner Vassos Alexander. Vassos has just written his new book, How to Run a Marathon. So we thought it'd be a good time to speak with him about the magic of the marathon and why he thinks everyone should run one at some point in their lives. So Vassos, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. Nice to see you.
Yeah, and you. So who is this book aimed at?
I would guess it's aimed at people who have yet to run a marathon and perhaps think that the marathon is beyond them. Because I can sort of pretty much guarantee, and you guys can tell me if you agree with this or not, I think everybody can run a marathon. Everybody's got a marathon in them. It's a lovely challenge. It's not easy. I'm not going to say everyone's got an easy marathon in them, but the fact of it being difficult sort of is the point of it. And there's, you know, there with very, very few exceptions, I think everybody listening to this, in fact, with almost no exceptions, if you're an existing runner, if you can get yourself around a park run, walk or jog 5K, you can, with some training, attempt and succeed in finishing a marathon.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can be very sort of intimidating when you talk about a marathon, but actually the reality is that if everyone trains hard and commits to it, then can definitely do it. What do you reckon, Jane?
I completely agree. I think I definitely did my first marathon on minimal, not minimal training, but I wasn't ready. And I think I completely agree. The marathon is magic. So I don't think, you know, I think you can enjoy a marathon walking. You can enjoy a marathon run walking. You can enjoy the atmosphere. I don't think, you know, I think marathons have become the thing where you have to run sub whatever, whereas it's not like that, is it? And I don't know. I think the marathon's magic, and I think it always will be.
Yeah, and the fact is, you know, when you've got a marathon finisher's medal around your neck, from then on, from that moment, for the rest of your life, you know, you are a marathon runner. You have run a marathon, and that's a massive thing to be able to pat yourself on the back for. And it's very kind of egalitarian, isn't it? You know, you'd rather be a kind of a well-trained, poor student living in a bedsit with barely enough money for baked beans than a billionaire who hadn't done the proper training. You know, it's quite simple. Train hard enough and you will succeed in running the marathon.
And how has the marathon kind of changed you? Let's look back to your first marathon. What was the pre-marathon running like, and what, you know, how did it change your running?
Well, I've got a sort of Greek streak in me. Well, all of me, I am Greek. So I've always had a little bit of a hankering to do a marathon, perhaps more than any other runner, because of the history of the marathon and Pheidippides making that sort of desperate dash from the battle scene in Marathon back to Athens to let the Athenians know. And it was urgent. You know, this was urgent news because the invading Persians were probably going to win that battle. And so the people back in Athens were going to just, you know, abandon the city and head for the hills and set fire to, because they didn't want to, you know, they definitely didn't want to be under Persian rule. So he needed to get the message back quickly, and he did. It didn't end well for him, for Pheidippides, but he'd had a bit of a week of it. He'd run 300 miles or earlier to Sparta and back, and probably fought in the battle. But it's got that kind of history to it. If you've ever run the Athens Marathon, by the way, that's awesome. From marathon to Athens. So I've always, above and beyond the fact that it is the holy grail of distance running, I've added the sort of the Greekness to it because of my heritage. But it is just, what was my first one? My first one was Barcelona. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the start line, the nervous energy on the start line. I loved the fact that after 18 miles, basically my legs said no further. And then we got the open hotel doorway where we were staying, my cousin and I, in Barcelona that weekend. And I was desperate to just stop running and, you know, start running a bath and have a beer. But I carried on, and then I loved the sense of achievement at the end of your first marathon is one of the great moments in life, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I remember mine was abroad as well. Actually, it was in Budapest, which is a great city, actually. I didn't realise how nice Budapest was, but that had the advantage of it had, you know, the spas the next day. So going around in the spas in Budapest after the marathon, it's such a feeling of achievement. And often it isn't, you know, it isn't your best marathon in the sense that you absolutely nail it and you've done the right training. But I don't think you ever forget your first one. And it's a very, very special feeling, I think.
I think you forget the pain, don't you? I think I've not had a baby, but I imagine it's like childbirth where you forget because you've got this baby and you're like, oh, yeah, so great. And with marathons, they bloody hurt. And then you forget and you've got a medal and you're like, oh, I'll do another one.
When's my next one? Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think your biggest misconception was about the marathon before you did it? Or maybe what you think other people's misconception is about it?
I think that people think that everyone on the start line of the marathon is Mo Farah, Haile Selassie, you know, Eliud Kipchoge, Bridget Koskay, Paula Radcliffe, you know, and absolutely not the case. You know, absolutely not the case. There's all shapes and sizes and colours and creeds on the start line of the marathon, and it's a really welcoming place. It's not some kind of exclusive club. I remember in Barcelona at the, you know, the hotels around the start line of a marathon will open a little bit early their breakfast buffets for marathon runners. And I was looking around the room and I was so intimidated by everyone, because everyone there at 5 a.m. was obviously there to run the marathon that day. And I thought, oh my goodness, they're all so fit and they're toned and athletic. And I was really intimidated. And then, you know, and you start running and then you realize that we're all the same. We're just, you know, we're just it's us against the distance. It's not you against anyone else. And so I would say that if the people are putting you off doing a marathon, then absolutely forget that, because it's a really welcoming place. And I think my favorite place in the world, and the thing I'm looking forward to most when all of this stupid pandemic is over, is just getting in the start pen of a marathon and getting that feeling of nervous excitement all around me, because that energy, you really feed off it.
Oh, definitely.
Are you a talker? Do you talk to people in the start pen?
Yeah.
I stand there trying not to cry. If you see me
anywhere near the start line, avoid me at all costs, because I cannot shut up. And I'm doing the first sort of 5 to 10 miles as well.
I'm the same. I like talking. It makes you feel like I'm kind of, I don't know, kind of in control of this, of the marathon situation if I'm chatting. I don't know. Are you the opposite, Jay?
I'm literally trying not to cry. I'm just sitting there on my own, trying not to cry, being like, what have I done? And then people try and talk to me and I'm like a deer in the headlights. They must be like, what is wrong with this girl?
Do you think then that, I mean, because marathons have been going on in, you know, during 2020 without crowds, I get the sense that for you, the crowds and the people are kind of a vital part of the magic of running a marathon. Do you at all see the appeal of running a marathon without those elements there?
I did the virtual London last October. I did it on the South Downs in a very stormy kind of day, very early in the morning, because I wanted to end with the breakfast hotel buffet because we were staying down in Eastbourne.
Okay, right.
And it was kind of lovely. It was kind of lovely because you knew that other people all over the country, all over the world were doing the same thing at the same time. But I just sort of, I missed them. I wanted to be with them. I wanted to be surrounded by them. I didn't want the occasional car to hoot its horn to sort of show support or telling me to get out of the road. I wanted, you know, I wanted 5 deep on the sides of the road, on the embankment like they are in London. I wanted those tidal waves of good wishes. I wanted all the silly costumes that you get, you know, in Greenwich Park. I wanted the whole hoopla. So I think a marathon, virtual marathons that have been going on, and for goodness sake, my friend Brett, who I work with at Virgin, Brett, whose marathon PB I think is 3:05, did a marathon on his own. We're talking on Monday, on Sunday morning, so yesterday, 3:11, just randomly around the streets where he lives. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Because for sure.
No adrenaline, no aid stations, no cheering crowds, no nothing. So to run something close to your best under those circumstances, I think is admirable. But I don't have that. For me, a marathon, a virtual marathon, is like sport without crowds. It's a little bit vanilla, a lot vanilla.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I think there's going to be so many people listening to this. One thing we hear time, and I'm sure you hear again and again and again, is this idea that I'm not a real runner, and you've touched on it, but like, what would you say to that person listening now on their 5k thinking, I'm not a real runner, I couldn't do a marathon, you're making it sound really easy? What would you say to them?
Okay, well, forget the fact that it's easy. It's not easy, definitely not easy, but wouldn't be worth doing if it was. On that start line in Barcelona in my first marathon, I definitely felt like I'm not a real runner. Unlike everybody surrounding me, you know, with their GPS watches and then their high-tech shorts and, you know, their shoes. Some of them, I saw people changing shoes on the start line because they wouldn't want to walk to the start in the same shoes as they were running in. And that concept, this is 10 years ago now, was so alien to me. I thought, oh my God, who are these people? What is this? What is this that I've stumbled into? And I felt like that, you know, the least deserving person of a place, of a bib number, of a start place in the marathon. But, you know, but we're all real runners. All of us are real runners, whether you can go a mile or 3 miles or 10K or half a marathon, you know, we're all real runners. We're all on a journey. None of us, certainly not us three, are going to break any world records or, you know, win any gold medals. But it's not the point. That's not why we do it. We do it for the sheer joy and for the fact that it's, you know, that it is hard, but we come through it.
I want to talk to you about the wall, because I think this is another area that kind of terrifies people about the marathon, the wall. You're going to hit the wall. What's your own experience of hitting the wall? Do you think it's an inevitability? And what would you say to anyone about the wall and whether it's something to be kind of feared.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fear the wall. Definitely fear the wall. The wall's got a capital W, doesn't it? If you were going to write the wall down, you definitely give it a capital W.
I think you've got to say it like Danny Dyer now.
Yeah,
I
you've
think
got
since,
to do it.
Since
Danny
that program's
Dyer
come
wall.
On, you got to hit the wall.
Yeah.
The wall. Right.
I once, in my first Ironman triathlon, I hit the wall. I ran out of energy. I ran out of glycogen for my muscles and my head went. Just before the start of the marathon. So I ran 26.2 miles. The wall that day for me was 26.2 miles long. You know, it took me almost 5.5 hours to run that marathon. And for a sub-3 runner, that is that is seriously slow and it's a serious slog. But I remember it rather fondly, you know, because I had to delve really deep to get through. I hit the wall in Barcelona at 18 miles, and it's a little bit mental and a lot physical, or it's a little bit physical and a lot mental, the wall. Mm. But I sort of, it's a bit like the muscle soreness, DOMS, the day afterwards, you know, when your thighs hurt. I sort of see it as a badge of honor. You know, if you hit the wall in your first marathon, you will come through it. You know, maybe you'll have to walk for a bit. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll be slower than you wanted to. Maybe you probably will be. Doesn't matter. You've come through. And so the medal means a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's right. You want a bit of drama, don't you? You've talked about the kind of the genesis of the event and you know, it doesn't get any more dramatic than Fiordo Pediz's amazing 300-mile run to the death. But I think a marathon that has a bit of highs and lows and emotional roller coaster. That's all part of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to a pal at Running Club just as I was writing the book, actually, and we were okay. This sounds a little bit like higher brow than me, and it is definitely higher brow than my usual conversations. But he's an English teacher, Paul, and a 2:30 marathon runner, and we were talking about famous start lines. We were just jogging to Richmond Park and we were talking famous opening words to books. And he came up with Anna Karenina, which is all happy families are alike. And so the interesting thing happens in unhappy families is the implication. And we sort of agreed that the same is true of marathons, you know, all easy marathons, all happy marathons, where everything sort of clicks and the miles just sort of tick by, if not effortlessly, then certainly kind of routinely. Well, they're all the same, but they're sort of, you know, the real real joy, the real interest comes when, you know, what's going to go wrong when and coming through it.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. Yeah, better narrative, that, I think.
Mm. Unless you break your PB, in which case you'll take it anyway, any which way.
I want to talk to you about the PB stuff because I think that, you and Jane actually both, I think, Jane, of when you broke 4 hours in Berlin and that being quite a, I mean, how many attempt? What attempt was that for you to get down to that?
Number three. That was number three to get to sub-4. But I'm not a, I don't know. I always talk to you about this, Rick, don't I? Because I'm not a time-orientated runner. I don't run for a time. I wish that did motivate me as much as it did other people, but I run because, like, I'm so proud of that achievement in Berlin, but I wouldn't say it's my favourite marathon. It's the time I got a PB, but my favourite marathon is London because of the atmosphere and the people and my family being there to watch and the magic of it. And I do wonder if I'm the only one that wouldn't put their PB marathon as their favourite. I don't know. I'm not a time.
No, I think that's interesting. What about you, Vassos? I know like going under 3 hours was like a big journey for you, wasn't it, to get there?
Yeah, holy grail for me. And it was a bit more than 4 efforts. And I was 3:02:11 for a long time and I couldn't persuade my blimmin' legs to go any quicker. But now, Jane, I'm with you. Maybe it's because, you know, old father time and PBs are probably behind me now. But actually, I frequently don't run with any GPS on at all, sometimes not even a stopwatch, just run for how I feel, sometimes hard, sometimes not hard, sometimes hilly, sometimes not hilly, but just for the enjoyment of the run, just to sort of a little dance between me and the distance rather than head buried in a Garmin, desperately trying to keep to 6:45 a mile, which is what you have to do for a sub-3 marathon. But it was, you know, it was a big motivation factor and it is one of my, if not my proudest achievement, it's one of my two proudest running achievements, which come up quite high in my sort of list of life achievements, to be honest, family and children aside. It's the running stuff that I'm really proud of, and possibly, you know, persuading people to start running or to restart running through books and whatever I say on the radio and telly. You know, the running is a huge part of my life, and the sub three marathon is a huge part of that. But I sort of feel like a little bit of me has grown out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah. I know Richard Asquith talks about it, sort of the age of the runner, the different ages that you go through. And he sort of feels like he matured to the point of, yeah, similar to what you're doing, running without technology and running for the sheer kind of intrinsic joy of running. Yeah.
I agree. I feel like I'm still super proud of those times, and it was a big motivator, but I actually think some of the best races are just the ones you just do and you just go at your own pace and you just enjoy every second of it. And that's what I say to those lovely scared people that come up to us at the Marathon Expo, Rick, and say, oh, how am I going to get round? You think, just enjoy it. Sometimes I think just run because you love running and you're lucky to have a bib on your chest. But maybe I'm too poetic and I should run harder.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It'd be interesting to quickly talk about, I guess, kit and technology, because that's something that, you know, a lot of runners get into, but it might be something that people who start their journey might think they need more kit, or might not be aware of how much kit they need. What from writing this book, what did you discover through that?
I don't know. I talked to some bloke about gadgets and gear, and I quoted him in the book, but I'm not sure he was up to much.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, some Neanderthal from Runner's World. Yeah.
You were awesome. You were great. And hang on, I've got a copy of the book over there. You say something like, running first, tech, gadgets, gear, a very distant second. I think that's your quote. And I absolutely agree with it. You absolutely, you know, to run a marathon, to run a big city marathon, especially, forget a trail race over the fells. To run a major or big city marathon with, say, 5,000 runners or more, you need a pair of trainers and some running kit and nothing else. You don't have to worry about gels. All of that, absolutely do if you want to, but you don't need to. You don't need to sort of feel like, oh God, there's another hurdle I have to leap over, is getting my nutrition, getting my hydration, making sure that I eat the same gels as I'm going to be offered on the course. All of that stuff, absolutely do if you want to, but you don't need to. Like you say, running first.
Yeah, I think that's a good message. I think the same with kind of when it comes to shoes and the idea that you definitely need to go and get your gait analysed on a treadmill, that stuff. I mean, I think, yeah, maybe that will give you a little advantage, but it can be a hurdle, can't it? It can just feel like, I just want to get out there and run. Why do I need to go and, you know, jump through all these hoops beforehand? And running should be simple and accessible. That's the whole appeal of it, I think.
The best thing I ever did, honestly, was... just bear with me, would stop wearing underwear. So I no longer wear underwear. And for years now, I haven't. And all I've worn instead of boxer shorts is running shorts. Which for a bloke is the same sort of thing, but it's just, it just takes one extra hurdle away from me going for a run. I don't have to go upstairs, get running shorts on, find the running socks. You know, I dress every morning and I run every day pretty much. So, I know that they'll get used. So I've just, you know, I can show you now, obviously, I've got running shorts under my jeans, I've got running socks on. And so it's just, I just need to get a top on or not, you know, I'm sort of ready to run. And it's just, what do they call it? It's like tiny habits, isn't it? If you can just make it slightly easier for yourself to do what you want to do, then, you know, you will get there. So not wearing underwear, wearing running shorts instead of underwear just makes it that much more likely that I'll go for a run. What if I've only got half an hour? If 10 minutes of that's going to get ready to go for your run, and I've only got 20 minutes, and then is it really worth it? That, you know, whereas if I'm out the door in 5 seconds, boom.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. I think there's a quote at the beginning of one of your chapters that says, the best training plan is the one that you can stick to.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, I think that's true as well. You know, all these kind of very ambitious training plans that, yes, if you never get injured or you have the time, then fantastic. But actually, the best training plan is the one that you can actually fit into your life and that you enjoy and carry on doing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And one that you can celebrate. You know, I just think that the training is it. You know, elite runners talk about kind of process over results, and I'm completely on board with that. You know, even like the pandemic hit just before some of the major spring marathons, and Boston and Tokyo were cancelled quite late on, weren't they? And a lot of people had done a lot of training for those, but I don't think any of them, looking back, would have resented the training because of the sorts of people that the training, you know, made them become. It gave them determination. It gave them a bit of grit. So even though the marathon itself is like the cherry on the icing of the cake, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of what sort of person you become. So I think the training actually is everything. So yeah, don't let that be something else you beat yourself up about. Just get a training plan, get involved, stick to it as much as you can. And that's, you know, I think that's it really, the training.
Are we all going to run a marathon this year? Do you think the marathons are going to be back on?
Oh, God, I hope so, don't you? I think by October, surely. I mean, the trouble with the really big ones is that they are, you know, they are so international, and it looks like there's going to be quite a lot of sort of differences worldwide in where countries are with the vaccine. Where, as we speak, you know, the UK is doing amazingly well and hitting every target and exceeding them, and fantastic. But there are no travel corridors, and that's that is the worry. It will London on, is it October the 3rd, will that be run as, you know, London was run in April 2019? Let's hope so.
Have you got your eye on one, Jane, or not? Are you just not thinking that bad?
I've got London and Chicago on the cards, but they're now a week apart, so who knows? We'll just carry on and see what happens. I'm not ruling either or any out. Maybe I'll do two back-to-back.
I know a man who had a go at doing two marathons back-to-back, and I think the first one went better than the second, but you decided to run it as a sort of training run. This gets a mention in the book as well, the Manchester and then London thing that you did.
I messed up there. I did mess up there. I think it was 2 weeks, actually, 2 weeks apart. And I was just doing Manchester. I'm an ambassador for the Manchester Marathon. I love the Manchester Marathon. And it was just the perfect day, the perfect weather. My legs were working really nicely. And I was floating round. And then at about 15, 16 miles, when it just started to sting, I thought, well, I've trained hard. Don't go too hard in Manchester. The PB attempt is still London. And I think at this stage, my PB was 2:59. And every time it hurt, I just dialed back a little bit so it stopped, you know, being a struggle. And I floated in 3:01, which is actually, you know, as far as my legs are concerned, I may as well have run a 2:59. And certainly that's what they told me in London 2 weeks later. And then I was talking to Danny, who works for the London Marathon, Danny Nimmerk. She's in charge of the events, like the expo, and she won the women's race with a huge PB, and I was thrilled for her. And she said, how did you get on? And I told her, you know, that every time it hurt, I dialed back. And she just stared at me and went, why? And then, oh yeah. But you're not always thinking clearly, are you, in the midst of a marathon, certainly not 15 miles in. And I just, I wonder, but maybe, you know, maybe it was meant to be. I don't really care. I mean, maybe I would have broken my PB. Probably I would, but maybe the extra pressure would have, you know, found its way to my legs as it sometimes does. And I'd have run even slower.
Yeah, true. Hey, still a good time.
Yeah. Thank you. Know.
Thank still
you.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do feel that that's like the asterisk. Yeah. All of the other ones around about there, I absolutely gave everything. And then that one, I absolutely didn't. I hardly gave anything. And I thought, what if? That's the only what if.
So how to run a marathon? How do people get a hold of it? Is it out already or it's coming out?
Yeah, it's out. It's out. It's everywhere. It's audiobook. It's Kindle. It's Amazon. Wherever you want. And what it is, like part one is, you know, why everybody should. And part two, where you star, Rick, is how anybody can. So stories of my marathons, like Manchester, like Barcelona, like when I did finally break 3 hours in London, but others where they've gone spectacularly wrong, like a PB attempt in Amsterdam and all over. And then interspersed with other wonderful people, Lisa Jackson, who writes a column.
Yeah, she's a columnist, yeah.
Magazine,
yeah.
And, you know, she's like, her title is that, you know, the woman who finishes last. Catherine Switzer, the first woman to run an official marathon, and they tried to haul her off the course in Boston, and she changed the way people think about women and running marathons, to a blind runner who fell in love with his guide, and then they run marathons all over the world, to this amazing woman called Susie, who was at the finishing line in Boston that horrible year when the bombs went off, and then she came back the next year and got married mid-course. You know, lovely stories from wonderful people. And then the second half is the experts, training guides, nutrition, you know, mental side of it, and the gadgets and gear, which is the best chapter of this.
Worth it just for that. No, it sounds great. I think really important to get those stories in there, because as you say, that really is the magic of the marathon, isn't it? It's the kind of personal stories that go into the race, I think.
Well, I always think, you know, whenever I'm asked to give a talk or anything like that, you know, the way I always start is literally with the words, let me tell you a story, because people like being told stories. We all love being told stories, whether it's my six-year-old reading me. She read it to me. She read me Mr. Tall in the bath yesterday, which was great, to just, you know, hearing stories about marathons. We're a species that loves a story. So you don't want to tell people how they can run a marathon by literally, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. Just tell them stories, and hopefully that will inspire people to give it a go. Because honestly, if you're listening to this thinking, should I run a marathon? The answer, 100%, is yes.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much to our guest, Vassos Alexander, and let us know what you think about the podcast, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.